One of the rock star ministers of our time is a woman named Nadia Bolz Weber. She's 6'1". Her arms are covered in tattoos. And she is not only electric in her delivery, she is wise and knowledgeable. Hard won not only by attending seminary and a stint as a stand-up comedian, but also from her experience of being an addict and then in recovery. She is not Unitarian Universalist, though in her youth she tried to become one. She looked, however, into her own soul and felt it was far messier than anything that we were proclaiming in our theology. She looked at the wreckage of human history, the evil perpetrated by human hands, and felt dissatisfied with what Unitarian Universalism had to offer. She knew we humans are much more broken than either our focus on individual worth and dignity or our rather thin theology on the nature of evil. I do want to say we've gotten a little bit better on that one since she was looking at this, but it's still a place where we need to pay more attention. So she ended up finding her home in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America and has moved that conservative Christian denomination in progressive directions it would not have otherwise gone to. So I think she found her right home. She started a congregation in her living room called the House for All Sinners and Saints, and it has grown by leaps and bounds, now meeting in its own building in Denver, since it now has over 250 members and scads of visitors every Sunday. You might be asking yourself why I am telling you about a congregation two-thirds of a continent away. And it's because of this thing that she tells us she says to every new person she meets. She wrote about it in her book, Accidental Saint. It's my practice to welcome new people to the church by making sure that they know that the House for All Sinners and Saints will, at some point, let them down. And that I will say or do something stupid and disappoint them. And then I encourage them to decide before that happens if they will stick around after it happens. If they leave, I tell them they will miss the way that God's grace comes in and fills in the cracks left behind by our brokenness. And that's too beautiful to miss. I want a name tag that says that. I want it to say to new folks, but more so I want it to say to any of you who've been here longer than just today or last week or this past month, I want to say it to those folks whose feelings have been hurt or have come away misunderstood by me already or by someone else who looks or sounds like me or who has stood in this pulpit a few years ago or a few decades ago. In fact, I have said it to some of you in some of our one-on-one conversations in small groups, and I said it to you on the day that you called me. Back in May, Niles, one of our beloved children who came forward and helped earlier, he bravely said what is true for so many of us and what is true for me. On that day, back in the summer, during our time for all ages, I asked a question, and he put his hand up to answer it, and I called on him, and do any of you remember this? He changed his mind, saying that he was afraid he might get it wrong. I fell in love with Niles, and I fell in love with you that time, in that moment, because that is me. On a daily basis, afraid of getting it wrong. And the only saving grace I have found about that heavy weight of fear of doing something wrong, of not having the right answer, or even worse, having the exact wrong answer, is the strange, paradoxical, true truth that I will get it, will get something, will get some things wrong. It is inevitable. I will get something wrong far more often than I want to, and more often than you will want me to. It's what ministers do. It's what humans do. We're kind of weird that way. So if we're going to get it wrong, if we're going to disappoint each other, if we're going to mess up, how do we go about this human enterprise of covenanted community for the long haul? How do we learn to trust one another? And more pointedly, how do you learn to trust a new minister? Some of you in the room have likely heard of Brené Brown. She is a professor of social work, an author of research-based best-selling books, and famous because Oprah Winfrey shone her spotlight on her, and everyone has joined in. There are some, including me, who critique her messages as missing an analysis of cultural oppressions like racism or classism or homophobia. Yet there is useful material there for us as we imagine what it means to have a shared ministry. In her work called The Anatomy of Trust, Brown developed a mnemonic to help define the essential elements of a trusting relationship. B-R-A-V-I-N-G, braving, okay? So B stands for boundaries. Clarity about the limits we have, honoring them rather than apologizing for them. Respecting not only the boundaries of others, but our own. Saying yes when we can say yes. Saying no when that is our answer. R stands for reliability. Trust is not given. It is built over time. I start by doing what I say I'm going to do. But to actually earn your trust, I then must demonstrate reliability, do what I say I'm going to do over and over. Brown talks about marble jar people, and I actually found some marbles up here, so we have a visual aid. Each time someone is reliable, it adds a marble to your jar of trust. And when they don't, it takes away one, sometimes two, maybe more. In trusting relationships, we want to build up our marbles in each other's jars so that when those inevitable moments come, when we mess up, that there are still enough marbles in there to keep us in covenantal relationship with each other. I want to say here now, it is my intent, it is my goal to be your marble jar minister. A stands for accountability. When I make a mistake, it's reasonable that you expect me to own it, apologize for it, and make amends. Again, this is a two-way street. Actually, I would say it's probably a multi-way avenue. Maybe one of those ones in Paris where everybody's going around and coming through, because we're all in this accountability place. It poses a question. Can we be with our discomfort around accountability, because often it does not feel good to be called out or called into community when we've done something that's hurt another. Can we be there with that discomfort and come out on the other side into deepened trust? This is a hallmark of a healthy minister, of a healthy congregation, and avoidance of it, a sign of an unhealthy one. V stands for vault. And I think she really had to stretch to make this fit the braving piece, but it works. This is the dual-faceted concept around confidentiality. As your minister, what you share with me in our pastoral encounters, I will hold in confidence. But not everything you tell me as a minister is told in that confidence. Yes, pastoral issues, issues close to your heart, about yourself, your family, health, your struggles. Those absolutely. However, if you have a concern about how a program is run, what a staff person is doing, a decision-making process in the life of the congregation, then it's my job to help the congregation attend to those concerns and to foster direct and clear communication. And this may mean that I will share your concerns with leaders who are responsible for that aspect of our collective life. And because anonymous comments are a hallmark of an unhealthy congregation, that communication will most likely have your name attached. I will always, always try to get your permission and inform you. And I will often, more often, try and get you to share your concern directly. So that was one facet of the vault. The second facet is choosing not to engage in what is commonly called gossip, talking about other people when they aren't around. We lose trust when we hear somebody talking about somebody else, even if they aren't talking about us, because we wonder, well, will they do that when it's about my business? When it comes to congregational dynamics, there's a different word for this. It's triangulation. When we're talking about someone else to this person, trying to get them into our triangle. Some people think it's a way to avoid conflict, but it actually deepens it. And I don't really have a sense now of how that plays out here, but it's something I pay attention to. I, in our braving mnemonic, stands for integrity. Brown has this definition of it, and I love it. It's choosing courage over comfort, choosing what's right over what's fast, fun, or easy, and practicing our values, not just professing them. That's probably a sermon in its own right. N stands for non-judgment. The concept here is that we create an environment where we can ask for help without being judged. And I find it is related to the last letter, the letter G, which stands for generosity. In all our interactions with each other, the goal is to assume the most generous thing about each other's words, intentions, behaviors. And this is something I pledge to practice and invite you to call me into community should you experience me doing otherwise. So if trust is what we are aiming for, we are fortunate if we get there, but surely along the way we will encounter disappointment. We humans are weird that way. Pema Chodron, widely known in the West, even outside Buddhist circles, suggests that we would be wise to apply a practical approach to the experience of disappointment by getting to know it really up close, exploring it, seeing it, and how it might color our perception of reality. Another writer suggests that rather than being the end of a possibility or the end of a relationship, disappointment could be the beginning of actually a true relationship. That in disappointment, there's a loss of innocence, but that can lead to appreciation of the person for who they are beyond our own stories, beyond a fantasy of that person. That same writer said that acting, that by choosing to not act on our disappointment, just letting it pass through us, requires a certain amount of bravery. And I think that's why I chose the quote from Maya Angelou about courage that is in your order of service. It's at the top there. I think that's why Brené Brown, when teaching about trust, chose braving as her memorable acronym. Being brave, having courage, these qualities in the face of disappointment allow us to move through it rather than having it lead us. So this is my ask of you. Notice your disappointment. Don't suppress it. Don't turn it into the invisible elephant in the room. And for God's sake, don't feed it or plug it into some electrical outlet so it's a giant lawn ornament like at Halloween or Christmas. Notice it. Bring curiosity to it. Where does it come from? It might come from something I've done or didn't do. That is for sure. But it is just as likely, and in some instances more likely, to come from something happening that you did not expect or something that's happening that you had hoped would. It's more likely to come from an attachment you have, informed by your own story and life experiences that led you to expect or hope for something that you did not even know that you were expecting or hoping for. So your experience of disappointment can shine a light there, and I welcome a conversation about it. I'm curious about it. Have you ever noticed that our expectations of new lovers or new friends are influenced, sometimes strongly, by our experience of past lovers and friends? Amen. Thank you. It's the same thing with ministers. Sometimes we are hoping for someone nearly the same, and sometimes we are hoping for someone exactly the opposite, and sometimes both at the same time. All of it is a reaction to the past. The heart can't help but compare, but such comparisons, particularly when they're not conscious, are bound to bring disappointment. And here, I want to say that sometimes disappointment isn't based on some false attachment. Sometimes, when you listen to disappointment, it is a response to an action that lacks integrity. Sometimes disappointment comes from actual harm that has been done or could be done. Perhaps malicious or manipulative deception. Perhaps misconduct, whether by a minister or a leader or someone who has power and it has been misused. This has happened in our world. This has happened in Unitarian Universalism. We don't need to look away. In such cases, the guidance starts similarly. Notice the disappointment. Feel it. Be curious about it and let it pass through. But don't stop there. Speak up. Tell your truth as you know it, and be sure you are heard. This too requires courage. This too requires being brave. I promise I will mess up. I will get it not right, not on purpose and not maliciously, but because right isn't possible all the time. Because what's right for you isn't right for you, and so someone is left out. I will mess up because I am new at this thing, but even because long-established ministers mess up. We're just weird that way. Sometimes I will get it not right, but not on purpose, not intentionally, but it will turn out that exactly that mess up, that failure, that risk will be exactly what we need to learn, what we needed to know to move forward or to revisit some old understanding that has calcified, but now, because of the mistake, because of disappointment, it will lose that hard outer shell. And first, it will become raw, and that hurts. But then it will become supple, allowing new growth. Yes, I will disappoint you. I will say something or do something, not return an email, misspell a name, not read the book you so generously gave me. I will take vacation or study leave just when you wanted me here. I will disappoint you because as long as I serve here, I will always be your minister, but never your friend. I will disappoint some of you by staying a little too long, and others by not staying long enough. For some of you, I will preach a little too woo-woo and not enough science. Too much Unitarian Universalist, too little political. Well, probably not that, probably too much political. Not enough God. Too much of something, not enough of something else. And if we can stay together in the midst of this, much like Nadia Bolz Weber says, much like Buddhists say, if we can grow our capacity to understand that disappointment is inevitable, we might find we are further on the road to developing generosity, compassion, accountability, and deeper relationship. On that road, each of us individually and all of us as a congregation just might encounter a growing spiritual maturity, a growing capacity for navigating the rough and fruitful waters of conflict, and a growing potential for us to know our purpose in this world and then to embody it and to live our faith out loud. And whether it's divine grace that fills the broken places or our living into covenant that deepens our connections with one another on this earth, it's too beautiful to miss. So may it be so. Amen. Let us join our voices together for our final hymn. It's in the gray hymnal, number 6, Just As Long As I Have